Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for June 15, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, nations involved in the Trans-Pacific Partnership talks are wondering what's next after the U.S. House rejected fast-track trade authority. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason looks at the effectiveness of crop insurance during the 2014 crop year. And the folks from Earth Risk Technology in Chicago will look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Here are how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter July wheat, 508 and three quarters, down 17 and a quarter. September, 518 and a quarter, down 17 and a half. Soft July wheat settling at 489 and a quarter, down 14 and a half. September, 495 and a quarter, down 15 and a quarter. July corn settling 348 and a quarter, down 4 3/4. September, 352 and 3/4, down 6. December, 363 and a half, down 6. July soybeans settling 937 and 3/4, down 2 1/4. September, 907 and 3/4, up 1/4. November, 904 and a quarter, unchanged on the day. July soybean meal settling 313.20, down 4.20. July soybean oil settling 32.69, down 45 cents. Now some last trades. June live cattle 152.25, down 20. August feeders are 224, 27 and a half. They're up 82 and a half. And July lean hogs 77.07 and a half. They're down 97 and one half. And those are Monday's settlements and last trades from the Chicago Board of Trade. Looking at meteorologist Drew Linder's weather highlights, he says the two-week outlook remains favorable for crop development across the Midwest, as regular rounds of showers and thunderstorms will maintain high soil moisture levels across the region. By late June, much of the region will be left with enough soil moisture that if a period of hot and dry weather were to evolve during the early to middle part of July, crops would not be seriously stressed from a lack of moisture. Delays to early soft wheat harvesting will occur in the lower Midwest during the next 2 weeks, and rain should fall frequently enough to raise concerns over wet weather diseases and crop quality declines. Some heavy rain will affect the lower Midwest this week, and some flooding is likely. Eastern Kansas into Missouri and some nearby locations in Illinois will be wettest and should see the most serious flooding. A tropical disturbance in the Gulf of Mexico will move into Texas later this week, with its remnants moving northward into the lower Midwest late this week. There is some potential for the remnants of the storm enhancing rainfall in parts of the lower Midwest late this week and into the weekend, and if this occurs, heavy rain and flooding could result. High temperatures through the next week will be in the 70s and to the middle 80s, with some upper 80s and lower 90s in the south and some middle and upper 60s in the north. Low temperatures in the north will be in the upper 40s to the lower 60s, with some middle 60s most days and some upper 30s to the middle 40s in the west tonight.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at Stewart-Peterson.com.
You are listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave. Good to be with you again, sir.
Oh, wheat very much the leader to the downside. It couldn't do very much from when we talked this morning.
No surprise that it stayed down after midday, Dave, because, and in fact, helping the corn make an 8.5-month low. And I think the midday weather models were really a big percentage or reason why we saw continued weakness in the wheat. Hard red wheat actually did make new lows after the midday weather model showed that tropical disturbance that you're talking about moving further east once it comes out of the Gulf of Mexico, and it's bypassing and missing a good section of the hard red wheat belt of the southern plains. So Kansas, Oklahoma wheat belt that produces the vast majority of the hard red wheat for the country, looking like an inch will capture a lot of the precip the next 7 days. So a lot drier weather forecast midday helped keep the sellers in charge. I would also say the condition expectations on this afternoon's report, very surprising to me from a standpoint of what we've seen in rainfall totals, but probably not surprising to the trade given what the USDA has done in the prior 2 weeks. In other words, winter wheat condition is supposed to stay, based upon Newswire estimates, at unchanged 43% as far as good to excellent.
December corn, 363.5, was down 6 on the day. We were looking at a 365 line in the sand earlier.
Yeah, and we closed below that, again, because of the wheat market primarily. I would also say because of the conditions and the rainfall forecast going forward with the trade understanding that maybe the planting progress for soybeans is a bigger supply issue than the corn market would be right now for the corn production. In other words, soybean planting expectations are around 86% for today's report. That's only about 7% better than last year. And so I think while the corn had nice export inspections, 43 million bushels reported, it did not have the ability to trade that demand side of the equation, mainly because of the spreading going on in it and mainly because of the wheat, in my opinion.
Yeah, 43 versus 29 a week ago, and the soybeans are 8.3 versus 7.9 last week, and even the wheat had a little bit of a pickup, 13.8 versus 11.4, but the trade shrugged off all of those demand numbers.
Yeah, it did, and you know, one thing it did pick up on in terms of demand was the crush report, the May crush being the largest on record at a little over 148 million bushels, and oil stocks up about 9.5% versus April, suggesting to me that maybe we crushed a lot and crushed that record May monthly total, mainly for meal and for livestock demand. So the beans, I think the trade, generally speaking, in the last 6, 7, 8 months, continues on a similar path, that it's willing to take on good demand news and good demand information and price that into the soybeans, whereas the overwhelmingly negative supply analysis in the corn and wheat just won't allow much good demand news to filter into the price.
Yeah, probably at the final analysis today, that May soybean crush, the reason that November soybeans came off of the contract lows or the lows for the move it made today and pretty much came all the way back to zero on the day. So what are we left with going forward for the balance of the week off of all this?
Well, you know, like you talked about this morning, we do have the Federal Reserve talking. I think we're going to take baby steps at this stage of the game. I mean, there's already now starting to be talk because of that forecast that you just talked about from Drew Lerner before we came on air about, you know, having ample moisture levels going into the main part of the pollination and reproduction phase of the commodities for the row crops, that traders and analysts are now starting to talk about how we're going to have a good crop and it's going to be tough to get a yield shift or a supply shift to give us a good enough change in trend that may be an issue where we go all the way into harvest before we get any kind of shift in the trend. And I think certainly the conditions report is probably the first step in these baby steps to changing the trade's mind on that. I will be watchful to see if the corn conditions really are unchanged at 74% good to excellent, and the soybeans are 69% unchanged from last week in terms of good to excellent, because the anecdotal evidence and the clients and subscribers that I've been talking to since last Monday, Tuesday time period have been saying, by and large, their crop has not gotten better in the vast majority of the Corn Belt. It's probably either stayed the same or actually gone backwards some. So I will be interested to see if we can actually keep last week's numbers. And obviously USDA's numbers in their reports as of the last 3 weeks have continued to show really good numbers even in the midst of these heavy rains. So maybe I'm off, but anecdotally it would suggest that we're not seeing as good a crop as we had a week ago. So we'll start there and then see what the Fed has to say and see if that doesn't bring the wheat around and the dollar goes down another leg, and then maybe that turns the tide a little bit quicker than some of the trade's thinking.
We'll have to see if the trade believes that anecdotal information, or are they going to go with the flow and say, you know what, we planted a lot of crop early in that corn crop. It's all going to come to pollination within a fairly short window. That window's just after July 4th. Boy, it's looking awful good.
Well, and this goes back to the spreads. I think you make a good point, is that if you want something like that to not get pushed into the marketplace, you need the spreads to do a lot of the work for you. You need the cash basis to do a lot of the work for you. I would rather see the futures market find the bottom and the cash not to have to do all the heavy work at this time of year, especially because mainly that once we get the dollar out of the way, you can start to see a lot of shorts that need to be covered, and you could see a lot of money potentially moving back in as an asset class into the commodity sector as a whole. I mean, copper made a new 3- or 4-week low today as well, so the commodities in general just aren't getting the job done on the futures market.
Thank you much, Mike.
Thanks, Dave.
Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, and he is in Atchison, Kansas. In agricultural news, last Friday's rejection of fast-track trade authority puts the potential Trans-Pacific Partnership in limbo. Trade officials in Japan say defeat of the trade promotion authority means the effort to forge the 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership trade pact is unlikely to succeed. Still, Australia's Trade Minister, Andrew Robb, says he is optimistic that countries involved in the trade talks can reach an agreement. The American Farm Bureau Federation is crying foul that federal officials can make Clean Water Act determinations without ever stepping foot on a farm or ranch based on an addition to the final waters of the United States rule. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has used technology for years in making determinations and will continue to do so along with on-site visits. The final WARTIS rule, however, establishes no limits on whether EPA can use technology exclusively in any situation and does not require on-site investigations. Don Parrish, Senior Director of Regulatory Relations for the American Farm Bureau Federation, says farm groups never were given an opportunity to comment on newly inserted details about how technology may be used. The addition to the rule suggests EPA and the Corps will be able to compare data collected across a period of time from a variety of federal government agencies to examine whether landowners have altered tributaries. CME Group is rolling out a new futures order type for agricultural products today to help smooth the transition to electric-only trade. The new Trade at Settlement, or TAS, allows market participants to buy or sell futures contracts during the day equal to the yet-to-be-determined market settlement price, plus or minus 4 ticks. One tick is 0.25 cents. During harvest, this could give grain elevators the ability to pre-hedge the bushels they plan to buy after the market closes at the settlement price. TAS orders will replace market on close orders, a type of order executed in open outcry pit trade, but not on CME's Globex platform. CME will be closing its futures pits after the July 2nd trading day. Options pits will remain open for grains, oil seeds, and livestock markets. Settlement in the grains will remain at 1:15 p.m., but the electronic futures market will continue to trade until 1:20 p.m., effective Sunday, July 5th, for the July 6th trading day. China's central bank is preparing to take new steps to lift the global profile of the yuan as the International Monetary Fund reviews whether to add it to the group's elite basket of reserve currencies. The moves include opening the door wider for foreign central banks and other institutional investors to invest in China's bond market. The central bank also will give foreign entities greater freedom to sell yuan-denominated debt in China. The report comes as a team from the IMF visits China this week to help assess whether to declare the yuan an official reserve currency, just like the U.S. dollar, the euro, the pound sterling, and the Japanese yen. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Last year, federal crop insurance performed really well. Todd Gleason reports this means it covered losses in the way that it was designed to do.
Over time, crop insurance is meant to even out the ups and downs in annual income experienced by commodity farmers. It does this by paying out $1 for every dollar premium a farmer pays into the system to purchase the insurance. The farmer can expect there will be many years when a payment is not made, but when the income from crops drop, a crop insurance payment will help alleviate the gap. Here's another explanation from University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Gary Schnittke.
When the crop insurance program was designed to perform so it had a loss ratio of about 1. So a loss ratio equals payments that are made divided by total premium. So over time, payments should about roughly equal total premium. So a loss ratio 1 is about the target. And if we have loss ratios of less than 1, it means that payments were less than premium. And if we have payments greater than premium, we will have loss ratios of greater than 1.
Last year, for all covered crops harvested in 2014, the loss ratio was 0.9. Now, this is slightly above the annual yearly average of the last decade. The long-run average is 0.82.
Overall, you would say 2014 is an average year. We didn't have high, which happened in 2012 when we had a 1.62 loss ratio, and it wasn't one of the low years, which is 0.53, which happened in 2007.
Last year, the loss ratio for corn was 0.05. Wheat losses nearly topped that chart at 1.13. Rice, though, had a really bad income year. Its loss ratio was 1.49. By contrast, the soybean loss ratio was just 0.54.
Soybeans for the last several years have had loss ratios consistently at that 0.5 range. It hasn't paid many payments compared to its premiums in the last 4 or 5 years.
Last year, Gary Schnittke says the data shows most of the Corn Belt state payments were made in Iowa and Minnesota.
Many of those counties in the northern two-thirds of Iowa and Minnesota had loss ratios above 2. So losses in those parts of the country were quite high. And the reason why they were high was because we had price declines on both corn and soybeans, and those areas last year did not have as good as yields as the rest of the Corn Belt.
The remainder of the Corn Belt had very low loss ratios. The loss ratios were below 1 in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Missouri, and the Dakotas. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
This Stock and Commodity Report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4800. 800-288-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Joining us on the telephone to talk about the cash grain market is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Solid export inspections this week, and the trade said, heck with it.
Yes, yes. I guess the rain seems to be, if you didn't get too much rain, I guess traders are viewing rain as a good thing.
I don't know how their maps look, but I know there's going to be a lot of rain in and out this week.
Yes, yeah. And maybe they're waiting for the rain to actually fall before they respond, or you know, maybe they're just waiting for an official government report to tell them that the crop is not as good as what they thought it was a couple of weeks ago. I mean, the flood year of 1993, the markets kept going down all spring and all summer and didn't rally until the October crop report, which, you know, I think farmers realized much earlier than October that we had a problem that year. So maybe it just takes an official government report to make traders realize that this isn't as good a crop as last year's.
And they're not expecting that report to happen today at 3 o'clock.
No. Based on the way the market's traded today, I think they're looking for steady to better crop ratings when those numbers come out at 3.
So what does this all mean for bases in the next 2 weeks? Because, I mean, that's really the window we're looking at, and then we're going to kind of reset when we get the quarterly grain stocks report and when we get the acreage report.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that there's still plenty of old crop corn on hand, and I think a lot of farmers have been lightening up on that ahead of that June 30th stocks report because they don't want to take a chance, you know, that the government says we have even more old crop corn and feed usage is down and exports are down in that report. And more stocks are on hand in the quarterly stock. So, you know, we've seen basis levels start to decline, you know, anywhere from 5 to 7 cents over the last 2 weeks in old crop corn. So that's a pretty good indication that there is, number one, a lot of corn out there, and number two, it is starting to move a little bit. But new crop is an entirely different story. You know, we've got it planted, but we got a long ways to go before it's in the bin. So I think there's a difference between old crop and new crop corn.
And on the soybean side, we made new lows again today before it came off the floor, probably on the NOPA report.
Yeah, and 1 million acres of beans or one bushel difference in the yield can make a big difference. And I think there's a lot of acres that haven't gotten planted yet, and there's a lot of acres that did get planted that you can probably knock a bushel or two off of the yield based on this terrible wet start that we've gotten off to. So, you know, beans are at contract lows, below $9 again today, but they closed above $9, and today I guess I feel like there's more upside than downside in the short run, you know, at $9.
All right. Why don't we get your prices then today?
All right. Cash corn is $3.40. New crop $3.43. Old crop beans are $9.43. New beans are $8.84. And new wheat is $4.79.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather with the folks from Earth Risk Technologies out of Chicago, Illinois. It's Key West Conch Fritter Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1752, Benjamin Franklin's kite-flying experiment proved that electricity and lightning were related. He did that while flying a kite with a key attached. In 1844, Charles Goodyear received another patent for an improvement in India rubber fabrics by adding white lead to the sulfur and heating method he patented in 1839. He had spent several years since going bankrupt in hardware trying to improve natural rubber, which became sticky in summer heat and brittle in the winter. He had experimented to coat it with a powder to make it less sticky when he accidentally dropped a mixture of natural rubber and powdered sulfur on a hot stove in Woburn, Massachusetts. The heat completed the process. Despite the value of his inventions, he died in poverty in 1860. In 1851, Jacob Fussell, a Baltimore dairyman, opened the first commercial ice cream factory. At that time, the average American ate less than 1 teaspoon of ice cream a year. By the way, the first recorded reference to ice cream in the New World was found in a journal entry dated 1744. It described a dinner party at the home of Maryland's governor, Thomas Bladen, who served a dessert of ice cream made with milk and strawberries. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Mark Russo from Earth Risk Technologies, Incorporated in Chicago. Good afternoon, Mark.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
It looks like we're in a pattern where this first week, anyway, it's going to be wet on and off all week.
Absolutely. It's a quite a wet week here across the Corn Belt. Some of that is just due to, well, number one, more kind of ridging of high pressure, and that's bringing in Gulf of Mexico moisture. That combined with actually some Pacific moisture, some of which is associated with the Hurricane Blanca last week, and some of that moisture has fed into the Midwest. As we go through the week, actually, another component to this wet week will be this area of disturbed weather across the Gulf of Mexico, which is going to move inland into Texas tomorrow and then begin to recurve into the Corn Belt for later on this week. So off and on unsettled conditions with tropical moisture, that's the recipe for very heavy rainfall. And we see that here through this week and even into next week, although rainfall totals next week look less versus what we're seeing right now.
And parts of southern Illinois are in the target for the heaviest rainfall, is that right?
Well, for the tropical moisture here or the Gulf disturbance for later on this week, it looks like the southern part of the Corn Belt, southern Illinois into southern Indiana, kind of centered on the Ohio River Valley. That area looks to be the most likely area of the heaviest rainfall. But even, for example, the next couple of days here, we're going to see heavy rainfall in sections of the eastern Corn Belt, or even like northern central Illinois and northern Indiana here today, and then that shifts a little bit eastward in the areas of Ohio, eastern Indiana.
So the million-dollar question is this. After we get all this rain through this week, and then we begin to look toward the end of the month and then the beginning of July, let's say for a moment it does turn warmer than it has been, is there enough moisture subsoil to make a good pollination effort around the 4th of July or not?
Well, for, yeah, they're kind of the early planted corn that would be pollinating, at least from a moisture standpoint. Yeah, this is copious amounts of rain, and we'll be getting into the soil mm-hmm. levels here. And so that's a great question, at least the specific impacts are debatable, but right now, at least as we go into July, there are some indications of a bit more variable pattern. So actually some of this warmth that we're seeing right now that could begin to change, actually that would reduce the risk of having any kind of real extreme temperatures. Nonetheless, you know, this pattern needs to be watched.
We got about 20 seconds. What areas of concern do you have?
Well, no major concerns at the present time globally. I guess we're still dealing with some of those wetness in areas for wheat interest, especially in the southern plains, and then also for here in the Midwest, soft red winter wheat crop. Looking elsewhere, there's still dryness in areas of Europe. There'll be some improvement, but we do expect a warmer, drier weather to return in July. So Europe and Western Russia, that's the area to watch right now.
Thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome, Dave.
Mark Russo of Earth Risk Technologies, Incorporated, out of Chicago. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.